It is a strange thing that among the cardinal virtues that have been catalogued, enumerated, dissected, and enlarged upon by sundry fathers of the Church, as well as written about by later churchmen, with copious annotations thereupon, no mention has been made of a sense of humor, not so much as by oblique reference. It is not even to be found included among the deadly sins. Why this omission? One wonders. Certainly one does come across allusions to holy mirth, whatever that may be. It rather points to the kind of ecclesiastical frivolity that one would meet at parochial garden parties, of which I have a lively recollection from my incarnate days, that is, humor of a very restrained pious order. Though there is much that occurs upon earth that can, and does, cause deep sadness in our hearts, yet there is also much that gives us occasion for laughter in the spirit world. We can derive amusement from some of the wisdom of the incarnate. There are scientific gentlemen and great philosophers on earth whose knowledge and talents have gained them almost worldwide renown. Such is the habit of the incarnate that folk of this kind are regarded as the repository of most of the wisdom. Consequently, their views are asked upon every subject under the earthly sun, however far beyond the orbit of their knowledge and experience, it matters not. Not infrequently, some of these gentlemen will dignify the columns of some journal with the fruits of their wisdom. Sooner or later they are bound to be asked if they believe in a hereafter, and if so, is it possible to communicate with the denizens of the unseen world? How often is the answer, "No, I do not believe a next world exists, for the simple reason that no one has ever come back from it to tell us so." Such an answer as that, my dear friends, can shake the spirit world, and cause whole realms to roar. For we can see the truly funny side of such a portentous declaration and assess the speaker's worth at its true evaluation. For the living millions of us here to be pronounced upon as non-existent by one individual, upon whom so much reliance is placed by earth folk, does really have it humorous aspect. At least, that is how we can regard it, though at the same time lament the display and dissemination of such arrant nonsense. The scientists and philosophers of the earth are not entirely unknown to us here. Naturally, if any one of them shows the least glimmering of perceiving the truth of the reality of the spirit world, we are anxious to bring that man forward as much as we are able, so that by adequate investigation and research he may become a spiritual beacon, as it were, for the incarnate. So much weight is attached to the words that fall from the mouths of their famous upon earth that it is not only a matter of the truth, but of who speak that truth. It is peculiar that a sense of humor is a subject that has always been omitted from all religious thought and deliberations. It is as though humor of any sort belongs exclusively to the earth, and that with the death of the physical body all sense of humor is halted at the very portal of the spirit world, that to be cast off and abandoned forever. There could be no greater mistake than to suppose anything of the sort. If a sense of humor is part of our natural composition on earth, then we shall take it with us to the spirit world at our dissolution, and we shall find plenty of means and opportunity to indulge it. Religion, of one kind or another, being so inseparably bound up in the minds of earth people with life after death, it is not to be contemplated for one moment that humor can possibly enter into the scheme of heavenly things in the minutest degree. That would be a degradation of all that is supposedly holy. At most, there might be that holy mirth to which I have alluded. Pictures that show angels robed in shimmering white garments, embarrassed with enormous wings and with faces displaying no known emotion whatsoever, have given to the world an entirely false notion. Even the term angels and saints is spiritually forbidding, and robs exalted personages of all their intense humanity and warmth of feeling, substituting a remote, cold, bleak spirituality. You will read here and there in the communications that have come from us how that we hear the sounds of merry laughter going on round about us. Something must have caused that laughter, for we are not so empty-headed that we laugh at nothing. We are not given to hysterical fits and outbursts. No, our laughter is genuine because it has a genuine cause. We have much that we can laugh at, and not least among commonplace subjects is ourselves. That is something which, very early in our lives in these lands, we can learn to do. Here is the realization of the poet's wish that we could see ourselves as others see us. In doing so, if we have a nicely developed sense of humor, we find an ample field for the expression of it. What form does our humor take? That, I am afraid, is a question that it is virtually impossible to answer, for the same reason that you would find it impossible to describe to the dweller of another world what it is that provokes your mirth. Humor is a mental disposition, the causes that give rise to it can be fugitive in the extreme. There is this one can say, oftentimes the people of Earth provide us with somewhat to laugh at, when, in all earnestness and seriousness, they make statements concerning us of their spirit world which, though seemingly of deep significance to you, are to us decidedly amusing. Here is an example. It is customary, among those who know us and speak with us regularly and naturally, to designate our spiritual status or quality by referring to our particular vibrations. If we are of some spiritual elevation, we become people of high vibration, while the reverse is the case, people from the low realms being of low vibration. The very process and proceedings of communication will also be upon a high or low vibration, according to circumstances. To refer to some illustrious soul from the highest realms of the spirit world as of a high vibration strikes us as a quaint mixture of the quasi-scientific with the purely unimaginative. It is a method of spiritual appraisement which we never use, nor even think of, during our intercourse with one another in these lands. Though it may answer its purpose in a way, and serve to convey some sort of idea, yet it is most uncomplimentary, to say the least. It is, in fact, a trifle too scientific, so that a most wonderful personality becomes entirely lost, or overlooked, shall I say, in the anxiety to estimate that person's number of vibrations per second. I have purposely put that baldly, but I hope not unkindly, because I am anxious to show you that we do not distinguish each other's spiritual quality upon a vibrational basis any more than do you of each other. In your normal intercourse upon earth you do not ask, is so and so a pleasant person? And have for reply, oh, yes, charming. High vibration. At least, not if you are normally constituted. Let us examine the matter a little more closely. High and low vibrations are taken as meaning of high spirituality on the one hand, and of low spirituality on the other. In fact, good and bad. The higher they are, the more spiritual, the lower the less spiritual. But what happens when the vibrational computations are transferred to musical sound? As you will perhaps know, musical instruments are rendered in tune with one another by adopting a certain note as standard pitch. From that single note, all others of the scale are brought into complete attunement. The note so used is measured by its number of vibrations per second. The higher the note, the greater the number of vibrations. A note in altissimo will be of a high vibration. As we descend the scale, the vibrations become slower, or fewer, or lower, until we have the deep rich bass notes, which are so indispensable to music generally. Here is a question for you to answer. If a high vibration means high spirituality and a low vibration means low spirituality, is a high note therefore good and a low note therefore bad? There surely must be some relationship between a person who vibrates at a very slow rate, and a musical note that does the same thing. Yet what could be nicer than the full notes of a deep bass singer? We mostly like those notes, and wonder just how far down the scale the singer can really descend. What about all the bass instruments of the orchestra, so vitally necessary in music? Are they essentially bad in some way or another? If so, it would seem deplorably bad fortune upon the players of them. To be compelled to play upon an instrument of low vibration would appear to be a most inhuman state of affairs, and one that should have instant attention with a view to its quick abolition. Where, too, would the organ be without its profound pedal notes? The music would be incomplete without it, and would sound top-heavy. Music notes are measured by their cycles, their vibrations per second. It is a satisfactory method of obtaining unity of tuning. But on earth measurement by vibrations is mostly confined to musical sounds. It is such a pity that it has been adopted to measure our spiritual stature in the spirit world. I think we are worthy of something better, something more dignified, more friendly, and affectionate, and more truthful. It is as though you had your fingers upon our spiritual pulse just in the same way as your doctor takes your physical pulse to learn how it is with you, medically speaking. If the pulse is beating its correct number, all is well, a good vibration. Well, my friends, we need not take this matter too seriously. If you can see the pleasant side of it, perhaps the funny side of it, then take it as evidence that I have not completely lost my sense of humor since I came to dwell here. Though it may not be humor of a high order, high vibration. If it has brought a smile to your face in these harassing times upon earth, so much the better, and perhaps I shall, in this instance, have deserved well of you. I am reminded of a contemporary of mine, a preacher of great renown, and extremely popular. His popularity was founded upon, or gained by, an unusual phenomenon. At some moment during his sermons he invariably managed to make his congregation laugh. It was not, of course, hilarious laughter, being tempered both to the place and the occasion, but laughter it unmistakably was. This was regarded as something so out of the ordinary that his fame soon spread. It never seemed to bring anything in the way of ecclesiastical censure. The large congregation that he drew, possibly acting as a palliative, and the priest and his people went upon their ways that much the happier. And why not, pray? Why should laughter be so rigorously banned or excluded from religion? The truth is that organized religion needs to relax the tension to which it has submitted its followers. Churchgoing has developed into a grim business. There is little warmth in the services and less of truth in what is disseminated from the pulpit, though of the latter we will not speak just now. Humor is no sin. Laughter of the right kind is one of the best things on earth, or in heaven, for man. Alas, that there is so little of it upon earth at these times, for folk are feeling the great strain of past distresses and pains and of present frustrations. But lightness of heart will return to our friends on earth. Without anticipating what I have to say later on here, you must not suppose that we are insensible to the dreadful storm of sadness and trouble through which the earth has passed. So much of both have inevitably been brought into these lands. Inasmuch as folk have reached a safe harbor when they have at last traveled into these realms at their earthly journey's end, so have we used our best methods of bringing back to sorrowful souls a full measure of the true joy of living, of which the bestialities of the earth had deprived them. Folk who for years had forgotten what it was even to smile have again found themselves with their hearts warmed and their minds comforted and raised up, and by they have discovered that their sense of humor, which they thought had forever been beaten down, has returned to them in full vigor. I venture to say, in good truth, that the heavenly laughter which they heard, engendered by real human beings and begotten of kindness and joy of heart, did what no stern cold religion could ever do. Such folk were not interested in the generally accepted notion of angels, the conventional type of frigid spirituality, but they found that the free and friendly ministrations of kind and loving souls were an expression of humanity at its highest level. Many times have we laughed, in the greatest good humor, with illustrious souls from the highest realms, and there need be no doubt that if they can and do laugh, then it is no high crime and misdemeanor for us infinitely lesser folk to do the same. But we cannot always bring our laughter with us when we come to speak with you on earth. We must be very sure of our audience first, because of the mistaken notion that laughter and spirituality cannot go hand in hand. It is a pity that such an erroneous idea has taken root, but there it is. If some of us were to introduce that which would make you laugh, we should, most likely, be branded as low, frivolous people with whom it were better not to have any intercourse. Amongst our own special friends who know us well, and whom we know well, the case is a little different. But for general purposes, the rule is that we should not exhibit anything that might be mistaken for levity. Hence it is that the query arises as to our sense of humor. Seriousness has its proper place, I need hardly say, and we should never go beyond what good sense suggests and proper taste orders. As things are at present, we must suffer the unmerited reputation of being a humorless body of people, with no sense of what is harmlessly amusing. If we speak with a lightness that is natural to an ordinary human being, and there are human beings in the highest regions of the spirit world, our words will be condemned as trivial rubbish. However sublime the truth we may tell, yet if it be not framed elegantly and display great rhetorical qualities, and be not declaimed with a voice from which every trace of honest friendliness has been expunged in favor of the oratorical, then it is said that nothing ever came from the spirit world that was not upon an extremely low and paltry level. People do not want us as we are, but as they think we ought to be, and that imposes something of a strain upon some of us, indeed, upon many of us. We want to be our normal selves. We do not wish to affect a tone of voice or a form of demeanor that is foreign to us. We love to laugh. We have ample time in which to be serious just as of you. We can give forth our literature when the occasion demands, though there are many who deny that sternly. We may have these arbitrary limitations imposed upon us, but when you at length come to this world of the spirit, you will be deeply thankful to perceive that laughter is not only permitted but encouraged, and that in coming to us here you have brought with you your sense of humor. Never fear, you will have plenty of opportunities to exercise it. Next headline is Beauty. If more color is wanted upon earth, as I suggested to you earlier, more beauty is also greatly needed. There was a time when men covered themselves with wood. Whether this was done to frighten their enemies, or to repel malevolent spirits, or merely to pleasure their friends, it is of no consequence. What does matter is that color came to be introduced into the life of early man. It was a step in the right direction. When primitive man, as he is called, made his scratchy drawings upon the walls of his caves, the first attempts at self-expression through the art of drawing, that, too, was a move in the right direction. How far has the earth world advanced since those very distant days? It has progressed much in purely material things, and at a fairly rapid pace. But spiritually? That is another story. The earth has never been out of touch with the spirit world. In those far-off times, inspiration of one kind and another came to the earth with regularity. The wise beings of the highest realms have been and are always responsible for sending to the earth those telementations, as such transmission of thought has been named, to be used for the benefit and betterment of man. It needs not me to tell you that they have not always been so employed. The steady improvement has gone on. Just cast your mind back, and bethink you of the great changes that have come about from those early days. There, in the past, would be thousands of people passing into the spirit world from ailments and diseases which, to your modern notions, would seem strange because, although still to be suffered today, yet has medical science made such enormous strides that the doctors can quickly relieve the afflicted and effect a cure, you would say, almost overnight, where your ancestors would have perished miserably. Yes, indeed, material progress has been great and good. But while man upon the one hand has labored through medical research to preserve and prolong the life of his fellows, on the other he has perverted his discoveries, which is another way of indicating his inspiration, to the destruction of man by turning his knowledge to the making of lethal weapons of vast explosive power, where the victims can be numbered in their hundreds of thousands. And in the aggregate, millions of souls. So spiritual progress has been checked and overwhelmed by this good material progress. That is one instance, but it is by far the worst. The remainder are inconsiderable beside it. If you were able to glance at some regions of the earth as they were in days gone past, you would be struck by their greater beauty as compared with what you are able to observe now. The people were clothed in colorful garments of a picturesque kind, and the style of architecture was delightful to look upon, albeit there were many black patches in every town, a state of affairs not entirely unheard of now. In the inspiration that comes from the spirit world, the whole emphasis is always and must always be upon beauty, where it concerns what we all call the fine arts. The painters of old did what they could according to their limitations. for the painter, in common with the sculptor, the musician, and the like, had to begin somewhere. He was not born such. From the initial tentative scrawls on the walls of the caves, he had to be gently led inspirationally into deeper and broader channels. It must not be thought that inspiration is given only to the pious and holy, the ascetic, the recluse or the dreamer. Inspiration is transmitted from the spirit world to the earth, where it has the best chance of being perceived, accepted, and acted upon in the true and right direction. It would be something of a waste of time and endeavor to try to give spiritual teachings to a man who was a religious bigot, so confirmed in his bigotry that nothing would move him from his stubbornness of thought, and who moreover, held the belief that all spirits who manifested in whatever way were devils in disguise. A far better spot than that could assuredly be found for the gentle installation of the truths of the spirit world. The early painter, then, did earnestly and energetically his true best to paint what he really saw. His achievement often fell short of his ambition and his strivings, but he continued to labor, oftentimes with inferior materials, continued to perceive the promptings from the spirit world, and with such at his elbow, as it were, he progressed from the more or less crude and untrue to life to the more advanced and true to life. If so be it you should ever cast your eyes upon the paintings of the ancient masters, perhaps you would, of your kindness and charity, call to mind what I have just been discussing with you, and condemn not those master painters of the past, for what they did. They did in all honesty of purpose and from motives that were spiritually lofty. They were as yet unskilled, their materials were poor and often lacking. All those painters are now in the spirit world, and the quality of their present work is as far removed from their early incarnate efforts as light is from darkness. The same thing applies to so many other departments of human endeavor, but the tendency has been to deviate from the path it was best to follow, and to pursue other and less attractive avenues, simply because man is at liberty to exercise his free will. He gets a trifle out of hand at times, is thought willful, and eager to go upon his own. That is how it is viewed in the spirit world. It is not so much a retrogressive step, as a sidestep. The temptation has been to become more ornate, as you will see in art, in architecture, and music, for example. As time passed, still greater changes were made until, arriving at the present day, the hideous is enthroned. The cult of the ugly has been initiated. What could be more ugly than the earth's barrack-like buildings, set four square, unrelieved by the slightest ornament, and displaying rows of apertures, the window openings? Music composed in what is known as the modern idiom is barbaric, and the art of painting has degenerated in many quarters into nightmarish daubs of pure puerility, while drawings are often in imitation of the unskilled efforts of the novice. How does this come about? Where is the inspiration? According to what I have just said, these craftsmen are inspired from the spirit world. That is perfectly true, and the statement still stands. Inspiration can come from every conceivable part of the spirit world, high or low, light or dark. All the dreadful art forms are inspired by the lower realms, and nowhere else. What man chooses to do of his own volition does not alter the case. If he elects to debase his art, his debased spirit inspirers will rejoice. On the other hand, if he should decide to listen only to those lofty beings of the highest realms, his art will be as pure as he is able to make it. For there is a vast difference between that which is poorly executed for lack of means, knowledge, and proficiency, and that which is a deliberate and successful attempt to depict what is obscene, artistically speaking. You may query how it is possible that such frightful art forms should receive any encouragement whatever from your fellows incarnate. The answer, as we in the spirit world see it, lies in the fact that folk are not honest with themselves. No one will know of such dishonesty, for their reasons or their motives will remain secret for just so long as they wish them to be. It is very different in the spirit world. Here our motives have their immediate effect, and men must be honest with themselves, for they cannot evade being so. It is useless to pose and pretend. No one will be deceived by shams and falsities. With you it is otherwise, hence your debased hearts. There are also vanity and conceit to be considered. There are folk who like to adopt or patronize a new form of art as something extraordinary which, by virtue of their superior minds, they are able to comprehend and appreciate, and disclose hidden beauties that lesser people cannot perceive. It is in every sense a hoax. Unhappily, it is accepted in the higher places in response to a supposed popular demand. In music, these authorities will say, one never knows when and where a genius may be lurking. Consider the experiences of the past where a composer has been condemned ruthlessly by his contemporaries, only to be hailed with delight and acclaim as a master by later generations. We must not throw away any chance. The authority will add, that presents itself of discovering and fostering a potential genius. The public must hear this work, if it be music, or enabled to view it, if it be a painting. The public shall be the judge. Thus does authority delude itself, and the people of earth. Such a state of affairs does not and cannot exist in these lands, for which we are eternally thankful. The aim of these mockeries of artists, they will themselves claim, is to find a new medium of expression, or utilizing the old medium, to find new art forms. That is the claim, and the result is an abomination. It takes a real genius to discover a new art form, and these small people are far from being that. New art forms are the direct inspiration of the spirit world. They will be sent only when the authorities of the spirit world deem it fit and proper to do so. The instruments through whom they will present to the earth any new form will have been examined and tested first. Then how are you to know what is a new art form, and that it derives from the right quarters? You will know, my friends, by one simple test, its beauty. The earth world is no longer fundamentally primitive in the arts, though it may be extraordinarily primitive in other respects. Its method of settling international arguments and disagreements, for example. History reveals the different epochs through which music, for instance, has passed, and it is not difficult to place one's finger upon the real geniuses who have helped music upon its way. The same thing applies to painting. You will understand, of course, that when I speak of inspiration I do not mean that every wretched, ugly, tinkling little piece of so-called music, and every horrid little daub, are works of evil inspiration. There is much imitation goes on in such cases, for the cult of the unpleasant attracts other empty minds. There it is, you will remind me, the earth is free and nothing can be done about it. So is the spirit world free. Much freer than ever the earth world could be. But we manage somehow, as no doubt you will have gathered by now. Once more let us not take things too seriously, by which I mean, we need not distress ourselves unduly. We might with complete justification bring whatever sense of humor we have to bear upon the case, a course of action I heartily recommend to your notice. You can be sure of this. The masterpieces will live, the travesties of art will perish. If these so-called artists and composers could be accorded the ridicule they justly deserve, if they were not taken so seriously, which flatters their silly vanity and encourages them to perpetrate more artistic horrors, they would soon cease to trouble the earth, and that would in turn save us some measure of trouble when they at length arrive in the spirit world. Those artists and composers who have been deluded into a belief in their striking powers and unmatched genius, and who come here with their absurd notions and self-delusions fast upon them, have the shock of their lives when the great awakening comes upon them, thinking themselves to be wonderful upholders of all that is beautiful in art, and believing themselves to be divine instruments for the creation of all that is noble. They discover that in place of being men of artistic substance they are men of artistic straw. They see also that their work has no place in the spirit world, where absolute beauty is preeminent in the realms of light. The artist will soon learn that we do not have in these lands trees with purple trunks, yellow branches, and blue leaves, nor any other like distortions of nature. They must paint things here as they see them, as they are, and not as a disordered fancy takes them, nor a silly sham leads them to perpetrate. The musician, too, if he be a real musician, will quickly apprehend that his earthly musical monstrosities will have no countenance here for a single instant. He will have to learn that his music must conform to certain natural laws and that while he must not deviate from them, yet his range of invention is seemingly illimitable. At least, his genius is hardly likely to reach music's inventive boundaries. He, too, will realize that the laws of music are also the laws of beauty.